Right now, we're going to bring on our next guest. We've got Salmer Cogliano joining us for a little bit of an update on what's going on in the Red Sea and asking the question, is it getting too risky for shippers to consider using carriers who transited still? Sal, thank you for being here. As we start, give us kind of a little bit of a brief of the situation. Obviously, we know that we've had now, I think, over 10 or 12 container carriers saying we're avoiding the area completely now.
Yeah, what we're seeing this morning is actually some of the ships that have been sitting there in the Red Sea are turning around. So Costco, Maersk Lines, a couple of the major carriers. There's a few hanging on. ONE is waiting there to see. We had Evergreen go barreling through it last night, not really caring, it seems. But other major carriers, we're seeing massive diversions heading right now. And if you look in the Indian Ocean in particular, you'll see it, and in the Med, ships have turned around. And this is involving not just container ships, but obviously tankers. And so this is going to have huge ramifications through the container and energy markets.
And so we're looking at some of those ramifications. This is pretty upstream when we're looking at the overall cycle of economic movements. What are going to be some of the downstream implications as we start to see some potential delays or missing cargo or whatever it might be down the road?
Well, Anthony, as you know, this is a very choreographed industry, and goods have to move at a seamless pace. And by just doing these diversions, you're going to start causing chaos throughout the entire supply chain. We're talking about ships not making berths on time. We're talking about connections not being made just in time. Logistics is not going to work right now because you're adding at least 7 to 10 days in a transit around the Cape of Good Hope. And more importantly, some of the further out cargo now is going to have to be planned differently. For the container carriers, this is actually a little bit of a windfall. We knew they had some excess capacity. They were dealing with very low freight rates. And now all of a sudden, they're going to be able to add more cargo to their ships, maybe put some more ships on the service. They'll probably see some additional freight rates go a little bit higher, especially with the additional fuel and port handling costs.
So, Sal, yesterday we talked to you, John Kingston, about the effect on oil tankers in the area. And I asked the question if we're likely to see oil tankers targeted because they are more of a kind of higher commodity than some of these container ships. Do we think that that's something that could be a risk for those tanker carriers who are moving through the area still, either both in the oil side or the LNG side of things? Do they have maybe a bigger target on their backs because of the commodities that they're carrying?
It's very hard to say what the Houthi are targeting because it's been so indiscriminate. There was a meeting just yesterday with Greek ship owners who handle a lot of the tanker sector, and they're warning their carriers not to go through this area. So we're seeing that diversion. The one exceptions we're seeing going through there right now are ships of the dark fleet carrying Russian oil and Iranian oil out through the area. And that, you know, read into that what you want. But it's probably pretty clear that the Houthi are getting intelligence about what ships to hit and which ones not to target. We saw a Norwegian tanker hit not too long ago. And remember, it's the scale of these attacks. They're very indiscriminate. They're using drones, they're using cruise missiles, but the new weapon they're using that has never been really used effectively in anti-shipping before is ballistic missiles. And there's very little defense against that. And we've been fortunate so far to see just damage to vessels. No one's been injured or killed, which is very good. But obviously the Houthi, without really an air force, an army or a navy, have been able to alter the entire trade lane of the world.
Definitely a huge shift here in the ocean shipping world. And so when we're looking at things domestically, we're already starting to see comments or expectations that this is somehow going to wind up into some price increases for consumers or inflation. Can you talk to some expectations from yourself around what that might mean for consumers or what that might mean domestically here?
Yeah, I think the ocean carriers seem to be waiting to see what the navies of the world do, whether or not to go through. And right now, they're hedging their bet. They're not going to take risks. We've seen the rise of war risk insurance in this area. It was about 0.02%. It's now about 0.7% to go through the area. To give you the worst case scenario, back during the Iraq tanker war, it reached about 5% over the total value of the vessel. And that's a massive, that's millions of dollars added on it. I think as part of the consumer, you know, we're good right now for goods getting in for the holidays. But right now we're looking at that low point coming in, which is probably a good thing for us because we're expecting to see that dip in Q1 as usual when it comes to freight. The Panama Canal announced they're going to open up a few more slots coming through, which is good. They're going to be at about 2/3 capacity going through. But I think the big issue here is energy. Energy is going to be the one. You're having Europe heading into winter right now. And because of the Russia-Ukraine war, they're not getting their energy from Russia. So that energy has got to come from the Persian Gulf. That means a really long voyage coming around. And whereas in the container sector, you have a lot of excess capacity because container ships have been being built like crazy. Tankers, you don't have that. And if you start shifting a lot of cargo, high priority cargo onto aviation, then you've got to start moving aviation fuel around. And there's not that many hulls to do that. And if we start seeing an uptick in air cargo moving around, that could be a big problem because you're going to see huge costs to be able to get on those planes.
So, Sal, with, of course, as you mentioned, a big source of that energy coming from the Persian Gulf for Europe right now, do we see maybe the United States kind of emerging as maybe a big, good export partner for Europe? Does Europe come back and kind of source maybe some refined products or other petroleum products coming out of the United States instead?
Yeah, you actually have the potential here to reshuffle some trade routes. So a lot of U.S. LNG coming out of liquefied natural gas coming out of the Gulf of Mexico was going through the Panama Canal. That's not happening right now because, again, you've lost one third the slots to go through the Panama Canal. So a lot of that American LNG is now heading over to Europe. The other big exporters are Qatar and Australia. And so Australia and Qatar may handle more of the Asian market than they were doing. Nations like China really like to diversify. They don't like to be dependent on just one or two nations to get their goods. But definitely, I think what you'll see is a movement of American LNG into the market to fill what Europe needs, while Qatar and Australia may be handling more of the Asian needs, as long as you have this long diversion. I should also mention that there's a lot of unrest in South Africa right now. We've seen a lot of issues in the ports down there. And as you start routing ships along that longer route, you're going to have to refuel in South Africa. You may have to shuttle some cargo or shift some cargo around. And South Africa has been having a lot of disturbances over the past year.
And so with that longer route, have you heard any talks around emissions or increases in emissions?
Well, obviously, everyone's going to be measuring their scale. We're in that new IMO 2023 measurements. And so a lot of ships, again, we keep talking about this idea that scrapping is right around the corner. We're going to start losing ships. But right now, they're going to have to run ships a lot faster and a lot harder than they do. One of the reasons they've been getting around some of the emissions is they've been able to slow down. And, you know, you slow down, you have less emissions. Therefore, your CII scale isn't as big as it was. Now you're going to have to pick up the pace. And this is going to cause an uptick in emissions, and it could upset plans for IMO 2050 to start those reductions. Because what we're seeing here is a non-state player interdicting one of the biggest supply chain routes on the planet. 12 to 15% of the world's goods traverse that route right through the Bab el-Mandeb.
So, Sal, we appreciate this insight, and hopefully the situation gets resolved sooner rather than later. I got to ask before we let you go, the globe that's behind you there, are those red dots an accurate representation of where the global conflict is right now?
That is where I track everything, is on my Lego globe, so I make sure to keep everything up to date.
I love that. All I want for Christmas is a Lego globe that shows us supply chain issues across the world. Sal, thank you for joining us this morning. Great to have you, and Merry Christmas.
Hey, have a happy holidays, but I'm sorry, Kaylee. Roll Tide.
Oh, what a message to end on, Sal. Always amazing to have on. And of course, I'm sure we'll hear from him throughout the new year as well. Right now, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Fairies Now.